Thank you for joining us on this podcast from Hilltop United Methodist Church. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. The locals would say we are just a little bit east of the intersection of 7th and 106th on 106th. God's blessings to you, and we hope to see you on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Peace be with you. Our reading comes to us from the first epistle of John, chapter 4, verses 7 through 12. Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. God's love was revealed among us in this way. God sent His only Son into the world that we might live through Him. In this is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son to be the atoning sacrifice for our sins. Beloved, since God loved us so much, no one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God lives in us, and His love is perfected in us. The Word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Amen. Last 3 weeks, we have been talking about when Christians get it wrong. I'm going to want to talk today a little bit about how we get it right. For those of you who might be the first time here, I think it's sort of a little bit of a summary might be good. The idea we had was that we were going to take a look at what young people, young adults, 16 to 29 was the survey group, and what they had to say about the church. They were offered 24 adjectives, 12 positive, 12 negative. And these 400-something kids that took the survey didn't give the church a very high grade. They found us to be judgmental, hypocritical, anti-gay, number of things. And we took some of those words and we tried to examine them a little bit. The first week, we looked at the idea of hypocrisy. Kids sometimes see us, they like our Jesus, they like Jesus. They come back to the Gandhi quote. Gandhi once said something along the lines of, I like your Jesus quite a bit, it's your church that gives me a little bit of trouble. And they sort of paraphrased that. They came back to that idea. And we sort of agreed that we see Jesus in the idea of compassion. We see Jesus in the idea of mercy. We see Jesus in the idea of forgiveness. And when we fall short of that, we're probably being a little hypocritical. We're acting like Christians, but we're not being real Christians. But we also came back to the idea of the fact that kids don't expect us to be perfect. They just expect us to recognize that we're not perfect and be willing to admit out loud that maybe we have gotten a little lost on our journeys, and that they remind us of that. And we close that sermon with an invitation for all, not just kids, but all who see us going a little astray, that you're empowered to remind us of that. You have a voice. Don't hesitate to speak that voice up. Last week, I'm going to skip over the second week for a second. Last week, we came to the idea of trying to figure out a lens. Week two and week three actually were sort of two sermons, one side of the view and the second other side of the view. The second week was the idea of trying to develop the Bible, the book, as our worldview, how we see the world. And we talked about the fact that sometimes people see the world with a different set of values. And so our suggestion was to, whenever people start to talk in a way that it doesn't seem to be grounded in what it is that we understand, lean into that conversation. I'm going to come back to that. But last week, I used the imagery of going to see the doctor, going to see the eye doctor. And, you know, you go to see the eye doctor, and once they've gotten to a place that you really do need glasses, they then run through a series of exercises with you where they ask you the question over and over again, one, two, one, two. The question is, which version of the lenses makes your vision better? Unstated but implied last week was the idea of the fact that we can use a lens that is the Jesus lens of love, or we can use the lens that sometimes might be offered to us by Paul, accidentally, I believe, by the way, because Paul preaches a gospel of love, but we distort that sometimes, and we come back to the idea of looking at very select sections of what Paul has to say, and we can become extremely angry and hostile, particularly to those that are born into a different lifestyle, a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender lifestyle. I'll come back to that in a few minutes. So that's where we went for those 2 weeks. One was the idea of having a book that's important to us and we want to follow that book, but at the same time, having an idea of the fact that the book's complicated and we need to have something to help us understand what that book has to say and how it is that we understand some of these contradictory passages that may exist in there. And I would suggest to you finding a lens that helps you see that. Now, I want to come back now to the idea of what I talked about last week, and there's some implications from that, but I'm not sure I know exactly what they are. Now, for those of you who didn't hear me last week, I may make a thunderbolt observation here, and I want to ask your indulgence to go listen to my whole sermon or read my whole sermon from last week, because at the end of the sermon last week, I indicated that the United Methodist Church and I were not on the same page as it related to the issue of homosexuality. Now, I will say to you that I'm not on the same page on the United Methodist Church on every single issue, okay? I'd say I'd been here about a month, maybe, when Bill Strickland visited me in my office. And Bill knows what the official policy is of the United Methodist Church as it relates to the baptism of the former members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, all right? And the official position in Nashville is that the baptism that was conducted is not a Christian baptism. That doesn't sell real well in Utah. Okay? And they can make that the position of the United Methodist Church in Nashville. But I don't know too many Methodist pastors in Utah or in western Colorado or in northern Arizona or in southern Idaho or in eastern Nevada, Deseret, is bigger than Utah, okay, who buy into that. Most of us have gotten into the place where we treat it as an action of personal conscience on the part of the members, former members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. If they would like to be baptized into the Methodist Church, we honor that and we celebrate that. On the other hand, if they believe that the baptism that was done on their behalf in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, what God has done, let no human being try to render us under. Okay? And that's the viewpoint that we've taken. Now, so I'm already out of relationship a little bit with Nashville on some issues. Now, what am I going to do as a result of what happened, what I said last week? What I said last week was I wasn't on the same page. That's all I really said. There are implications of that, and I'm not sure I've drawn all the implications out to their logical conclusion. I'm mindful of the fact that last week I read to you a passage from Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail, and he talked about how if he was going to be an extremist, he was going to be extremist on behalf of love. That's easy to say. It's easy to say. And I think the United Methodist Church should indeed endorse the idea of extremism on behalf of love. And what you may have seen in the newspapers over the last several months involving a pastor in Pennsylvania, I can't tell you how embarrassed I am for the United Methodist Church. Shameful. It's shameful. Marilyn will tell you that I operate off of a core value of equity. It's important to me. I was in the military for 24 years. A punishment for being absent without leave in Germany was the same punishment for being absent without leave in Korea and everything in between. United Methodist Church doesn't have equity of punishment for violating the rules. Technically, somebody could complain here over the fact that they know a former member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has joined Hilltop and they weren't baptized. And you could have a trial. You could have a trial. You could sit up and say, Dennis Shaw is violating the Book of Discipline, United Methodist Church. Guilty. There wouldn't need to be a long trial. I'd sit there and go, you're right. I confess. I'm guilty. The pastor in Pennsylvania, 6 years before, had quietly, without large ceremony, gone to a place where same-sex unions are legal, and he performed a same-sex marriage for his son. I can't wrap my mind around the idea, the fact that his credentials need to be revoked. I'm embarrassed for the United Methodist Church on that. And so when kids say, from watching the news, wherever they watch it, listen to it, and they sit there and say, you know, the church is anti-gay, I'm not sure I have a lot of arguments with them there on that. I'm not sure where I have to go for the arguments. Out here in the West, you can do what that pastor did in Pennsylvania, and it's largely looked over. It's not a thing that's going to get you hauled into a trial. Now, I don't know precisely what's going to happen in a few months, but my guess is that if you followed what happened in Birmingham in November, where a bishop of the United Methodist Church, a black bishop, I don't think it was an accident he was black, I don't think it was an accident he went to Birmingham, I don't think it was an accident that he defied the local authorities, and he conducted a same-sex union there in Birmingham. And by the way, based upon the rules of the church, my guess is we're going to hear some more about that over the next 60 to 90 to 120 days. Okay? Where do I stand on that? I'm not sure. I'm just absolutely 100% not sure. But if the question is, when the kids talk to us, and with the question was we asked to the kids, how do you describe us? I could think on the surface level, they could indeed say that we're anti-gay. Now, I would like to believe that this church, and most Methodist churches in Utah, and most Methodist churches in the West, and matter of fact, most Methodist churches in the United States, this is not going to be an issue. This is not going to be something that defines them. And they're going to be able to look past the big church in the sky, and they're going to sort of do the rough equivalent of what we already do here with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as it relates to baptism. We sort of allow that person to sort of define, to help us understand where they're coming from and what they theologically believe. And if they believe that baptism they had was good, we're going to ignore Nashville. I'm not sure what I'm going to do precisely on this. I'm still wrestling with it. Took me 15 years to get to what I said last week. I'm not sure it's going to. I'm going to be in 15 minutes to be able to tell you precisely exactly how that's going to happen. But if my invitation at the end of week two was for us to lean into the conversation, it wasn't an accident of choice of words. When we lean in, we sort of try to get closer to the other person, try to understand, try to get inside their space just a little bit. And so that's what I'm hoping we can do on all issues that might suggest that we're not in agreement. Now, I want to come to the idea of judgment, which was the second week. Kids, young adults out there, I would just say to you that when we're not on the same conversation, just as my invitation is to those who were here that day to lean into the conversation and try to figure out what the worldview is that's driving that person, my comment to you would be also to lean into the conversation and you try to engage the person talking to you as to why they believe what they did. Sometimes judgment that you think you hear is a viewpoint grounded very carefully in a theological position. Sanctity of life is one of those things. Where that starts and when it begins is relevant factors, but trying to get an understanding of where we are on that. Now, here's the conversation I find interesting. Based upon sometimes these issues that are out there, people say, I'm going to leave the church. I've had a fight with the church over abortion. I've had the fight with the church over the gay issue. I've had a fight with the church over whether or not we read the Apostles' Creed. I've had a church over whether we use sin or trespasses in the Lord's Prayer. They do exist. Those arguments do exist. Now, let me offer to you a thought, okay? Here's my thought. There were women in my life that I was involved with that I tried to find a relationship with before Marilyn came into my life. All right? They got broken somehow. They got disrupted somehow. But I didn't swear off a romance because of those things getting disrupted. All right? I continued to believe that there was somebody out there that I could be in relationship with. And I've been blessed with 28 years of relationship with Marilyn White. I got food poisoning once. Actually, I got it twice. All right? You know what? Getting food poisoning? I ain't sworn off food. I still eat. Unfortunately, I still eat too much. I've gone camping and drunk bad water. You know what? I still drink water once in a while. Maybe not enough, but I still drink water. If you're one of those out there who's had a bad experience somewhere with church, go find a church where you're not going to have a bad experience. Don't let that single bad experience define your relationship with the community. Don't let that bad experience cause you to believe that you need to leave the church. Don't know quite why that happens, but we do. Now, the night that we did the joint service with Crescent Ridge Stake, where we had the music and I got out and gave about a 5-minute reflection, those of you who were here got a glimpse into my soul. You really did. And I caught up and I used the Methodist Church and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to talk about focusing on what it is we have in common. But I could have easily changed that to Democrats, Republicans. I could have changed that to tall people, short people, thin people, fat people, bases. I don't know about bases. I don't know. Actually, on second thought, I need to reevaluate that. You can't ever get along with a bass. They just impossible. Basses, tenors, altos, sopranos. You get the idea. Okay? But my theme was focusing on what it is we have in common. That night I focused on the fact that what we think we had in common was, for example, with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, was the value of education. Churches, denominational groups, had been responsible for starting universities all throughout the United States. They go from the far part of the East Coast all the way to the West Coast. Boston University, Northwestern, Duke, Southern Methodist University. I don't wonder who went there. Okay. Even Baylor. Is there a Baylor person here? Even Baylor, it was a Baptist, Texas Christian University. University of Southern California, even at one time, had a Methodist connection. Now, by the way, the list I went through was not all Methodist. So the church has done many things good. Are we sometimes anti-gay? Are we sometimes judgmental? Are we sometimes hypocritical? You betcha. You betcha. We're humans. We're human beings. We've all fallen short of God's grace and the glory that God wants us to be in the world. But that doesn't mean we do everything wrong. I think the way we look at education is one of the examples of where I think we do that right. I think we do that very right. In his version of the sermon of Adam Hamilton, when he talks about this one, he goes to an illustration I've used 2 or 3 times. I can't remember if I've used it here. But he uses the illustration of Grapevine High School and Gainesville High School in Texas. Have I used that illustration here? Does that ring a bell with anybody? Okay. Gainesville High School is a school for felons. It's a maximum security prison for young adults. They play football. They play football very badly. Very badly. And the year they played Grapevine High School, they were like 0-9. Scored 2 touchdowns all season. Okay. They don't have no cheerleaders. They don't have any. They go to the games in a bus without any windows. All right. When they play football, they play with guards, with guns. All right. Grapevine High School is a Christian high school. And they said, you know what we're going to do this week? You know what we're going to do this week? We're going to ask every parent here to divide up, and we want half of the parents to go pull for Gainesville. want you to go pull for those that are playing your boys. We want you to, we're cheerleaders, we want you to break up in half. We want half of you to go pull for Gainesville. We're going to make a banner up that says, Gainesville High School. Gainesville High School Marauders or something. All right? You know how many times the seniors on that team have ever run through a banner with having people cheer for them before that night? The answer is zero. It was the first time in their life they had everybody ever had anybody cheer for them. He played the game. Grapevine pulled their regulars off at halftime. Gainesville scored three touchdowns. Still lost, but they scored three touchdowns. After the game was over, Grapevine invited the kids up to come do prayer. They went out in the circle and they prayed together and they touched them. The parents had bought something for the kids, so when the guards had checked it to make sure there was no saws in there. But they checked it and everything, and the coach just comes over and says, "Do you realize the impact that you just had on these kids? Do you realize that?" The church got it right that night. The church got it right that night. The church got it right that moment. The church gets it right when we open up our Hilltop House six times a year for Family Promise. There have been people that wandered back in this sanctuary that says, I was a client of Family Promise 6 years ago. My life has been turned around. My life has been altered by the love that was shown to me by the collective churches and synagogues and faith communities that made up Family Promise. Church got it right that day when they did that. Your pastor's fund here. We have about $10,000 a year that comes in to the pastor's fund. Some of it I confess I probably give it to people that are lying, cheating, stealing, but they don't have it tattooed on their forehead. It's hard for me to tell. I don't know exactly who they are. Leanne and I work hard to try to make sure that we distribute resources on your behalf, that it's to a just cause, to a worthy cause. We do little checks and balances to make sure that it goes out right, and we try not to be taken advantage of a second time. But occasionally, I'll give somebody $165 to pay their rent. And they'll tell me, "This is a loan." I said, "No, it's a grant. Don't worry about it." And they'll 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, a $50 check will show up. 3 weeks later, a $55 check will show up. 4 or 5 weeks later, what I'm up to, $105, a $60 check will show up. And they'll write little notes on there, "You cannot believe how my life was turned around by your generosity. The church got it right." The church got it right at that moment. Now, for all of you that feel like I have to be finished at 11:30, I'm going to get it wrong today, so forgive me. We're in a relationship with the Wojibaco Navajo United Methodist Church down in the southeast portion of Utah. We're one of many. But our United Methodist women, we send them money. We sent a check for the Conference Committee on Native American Ministries that paid for 50% of the salary for a pastor in Cortez who ministers to Native Americans. I think we got it right that day. I think we got it right that day. The rescue mission, our praise band, goes down and sings and plays there once a month. They tell the broken of the world. They tell the people of the world that are homeless, that have been told by much of the world that they're worthless, that they're not worth the time of energy of anybody else. And our praise band goes down there and says, "You are worthy. You are a sacred creation of God." I think the church gets it right when it does that. My sister passed away. My sister is probably a delayed casualty of Hurricane Katrina. She had a heart attack about 4 months after Katrina was over. Not an official casualty, but most of us believe that the heart attack was partially induced by the stress of living in Biloxi, Mississippi during Katrina. But I talked to her on the phone, as she's a refugee, and she says, you don't understand, Dennis. You don't get it. The first people in our community wasn't the Red Cross.
First community in our community was the Catholics, the Lutherans, the Methodists, the United Church of Christ. Go on and on and on and on. I think we get it right when we do that. I caught the plane out of Atlanta to get down to Biloxi for her memorial service, and God placed in the seat next to me a guy who was a vice president of Habitat for Humanity. Sitting there talking back and forth a little bit. And I finally said, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm a Methodist pastor." "You're a Methodist pastor? I'm in awe." Hadn't had that happen very often. Why are you in awe? "Do you realize what a resource the United Methodist Committee on Relief is?" "Well, I thought I did. Tell me more." And he proceeds to tell me about how the first people for reconstruction in an area that Habitat for Humanity relies upon is UMCOR. I think we got it right. I think we got it right. Imagine no malaria. Why did the World Health Organization come to the United Methodist Church and say, "We need your help with Imagine No Malaria"? The answer is that where the road ends in sub-Saharan Africa, the United Methodist Church exists beyond the end of the road. They came to the right people. For $10 that we give to Imagine No Malaria, we save a life. This church has saved over 900 lives in sub-Saharan Africa. And we're going to save 1,000. We may be going to save more than that, but we're going to save at least 1,000. The church got it right. I could go on and on and on, and we'll never beat the Baptists to the buffet. The point I'm making is that when we allow the conversation to focus on judgment, we might be guilty occasionally. We allow the focus to focus on anti-gay. They might be right occasionally. We allow the conversation to focus perhaps on hypocrisy. They might be right occasionally. But we get it right a lot. I haven't given up on romance. I still eat. I still drink water. And my invitation is that still find a spiritual life. Humphrey Bogart is one of my favorite actors. Katharine Hepburn is one of my favorite actresses. In the movie, The Maverick Queen, she's going to be a missionary, and he's trying to help get her there. And he's sort of a odd duck. That's the best way to describe it, the African Queen. And he sort of tries to say to her, "You know, a man takes a drop too much once in a while." He's talking about drinking. "It's only human nature." And Rose says, "Nature, Mr. Allnut, is what we're put in this world to rise above." That may be one of the most theological statements ever made in a movie. Our default setting is to focus on who we are. Our default setting is to focus on our selfishness. Our default setting is to see the lens of the world through the only set of eyes that we're ever going to see it through, our own. Our default setting is to perhaps be a little selfish. We just sang a song. I'm going to invite the musicians to move a little bit here on this so they can sort of get ready. But the idea that we sang in that piece of music about draw the circle wide. I don't know about you, but I want to be a pastor of a church that has a big circle. I want to be a pastor of a church that sees our goal of touching everyone. I want to be a pastor of a church that says, our ministry isn't defined on what we do inside here. We come inside this building and we're equipped to leave. But where we actually carry out our ministry is beyond our walls. Let us go now out into God's world, living out the idea of demonstrating to those to whom love is a stranger that we are their friend.